What would it be like to be ideal parents? Have you known any? Maybe you are one, or maybe you are some. Would you recognize it if you saw it? Generally, our experiences are clouded by our own personal growing up, and that's what we tend to know and remember. But occasionally, we get brief glimpses into other people's lives. I remember as a child in the church, there was a particular family or two that I thought would be kind of cool to be in that family because it seemed like they had perfect parents or much better than I had. They had a nicer dad. They got to do more things. They lived in a better house. They had more stuff. And, you know, in hindsight, that wasn't true. But as a child, I thought it would be kind of interesting. Could you imagine Jesus Christ as a human parent? Can you imagine that? Can you imagine how the kids would feel to have a dad that did everything right, which would mean that the kids and mom are always doing, they'd be possibly able to do something wrong, but the dad would always be perfect? Wouldn't that be something? How would he discipline? What would living in that house be like? How would he teach? Would his kids be involved at church? Would that house be peaceful? Would there be shouting? Would he teach by child parables? Stories, words, example? How do you think it would go? If you haven't thought about these questions, maybe you should today. The notion of speaking on parenting for me is kind of novel, because I feel like I'm standing before a bunch of veterans trying to tell you veterans how to do it. So I'm not sure that I can do that all by myself, and I'd like to think I'm relying on the Bible and other experts and personal experience and other good examples, trying to figure out some way of getting across to you how it should be done. Notice I didn't say anything about, make sure you watch me if you want to see how parenting is supposed to be done. Because I feel like the subject is kind of like mice. You know, if you see a mouse, you can assume there's probably 10 or 100 more that you missed. And in my parenting, I feel like for everything I do right, there's probably 10 or 100 things I'm doing wrong, and there's plenty of room for improvement. I had a boss when I worked down in Pasadena. One day I, on purpose, gave him some advice on how he was raising his kids. Now, this was long before I had kids, but he let me know in pretty certain terms that I had no credibility because I didn't have kids, but I didn't know anything about it and really had no business giving him advice. Until I had my own, I wouldn't really understand what he was going through or much about it. So in a sense, that's true because I have a hard time. I've been a teenager, but it's hard for me to tell you how to raise teenagers because I haven't been there yet. Now, I can talk a little bit about young people, but it's a little bit different to talk when you haven't been there. So I have to be careful what I say on how emphatically I say certain things. But many of us here with children were raised in the church, in this church. I was born and raised in the church, but isn't child rearing kind of like osmosis? If you're in the church, shouldn't you just kind of know how to raise children? And I say, no way. It didn't work for me. Now, I want to get a few facts wrong here, but my parents came into the church in 54 or 52? 54. And they had their first child in 56. Now, I may have told you this before, but I'll remind you. My dad, on my dad's side, what I'm going for here is I want to show you what my parents brought to the table on child rearing. On my dad's side, his mom died when he was 3 years old, a very young age, and his dad, for some reason, married a battle axe that in the course of his younger days, at times shot at him while he was out on the hillside working. He's walked in the house and had a butcher knife hit him in the chest, handle first, on a couple of occasions. I recall, had lye poured in his eyes as he slept at least twice. She set the house on fire. And at one point, my grandfather took her to the top of a mountain, and he was going to push her off of a cliff. But he was afraid that he wouldn't go to heaven, so he declined, and They continued living in the situation. Now, he did hard work as a child. He pulled his end of a cross-cut saw when he was very young, so he knew a lot about work, but he didn't know much about love. Discipline, yeah, he had a boot in the rear, or a razor strap, or a gunshot or something, I'm not sure. Now, how about on mom's side of the family? Hi, Mom. What did my mother bring to the table in child rearing? Well, her dad died when she was about 4 years old. And so she grew up in a single parent family. She had a brother about 10 years older. But there was not a lot of discipline. Of course, there was no one to fight with either. But it was fairly permissive. She probably got her own way a lot. Spankings were basically unheard of. I think she said she got one time. So she basically had an easy life. Things went well for Mom. So, when I was a child, who do you think I went to get something off my chest? Or to talk and get consolation? Well, it was Mom, of course. You know, if you wanted to talk about hard work and work ethic and that type of thing, you'd certainly go to Dad if he didn't get to you first. Now, how do you think Dad felt about parenting? What do you think his concept of parenting was? And love and women and mothers? Well, I can tell you that he didn't have a very good example. Then God came along and called the two of them. Now, what God expects is for them to make a whole lot more out of what they have than what they were given. Now, I'm not sure how they pulled it off. God's mercy, trial and error. I think they submitted themselves to God and did the best they could, and God blessed that effort. In general, the kids turned out pretty good, except maybe for this one. But now it's my turn. So now my wife, not born in the church, but basically raised most of her life in the church, and me, born and raised in the church, my wife and I, what do we bring to the table in child rearing? You're familiar with the parable of the talents, but let's go there because you need to do something. Matthew 25 and verse 14 talks about the parable of the talents. Matthew 25 and verse 14 said, "The kingdom of heaven is as a man traveling into a far country." Now I'm going to probably take this out of context a little bit, so bear with me. "Who called his servants and gave and delivered unto them his goods. And he gave to one 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, and to every man according to his several ability. And straightway took his journey. Then he that had received the 5 talents went and traded with the same and made them other 5 talents. Likewise, he that received 2 doubled his. And the third one that had received 1 did nothing, and he got in trouble." Now, how many talents did God give Dad? I don't know. I didn't feel like he gave him 5 talents. Maybe he gave him 2, but he didn't bury his talent. How much increase did my parents have or produce based on what they've been given? And on a scale of 1 to 100, I'd say Dad probably started out about -5. Now, my upbringing was much better than Dad's. I'd say that Mom and Dad improved on child rearing at least 100%. Can I improve my child rearing the same percentage that they improved theirs? They took a step starting in the negative numbers and moved into the positive numbers, and now we're all headed towards 100%, right? Christ being the perfect example, we're headed towards perfection, and so we're trying to move that direction. So can I improve on my life the same way they improved on theirs? Well, we have to submit ourselves to God, do the best we can, work with the other examples that we have, and keep going. So what does it mean to be a second-generation Christian parent? Many of us here today fit that category. Doesn't it mean having the opportunity to do it better, to have not more? We're not talking more toys and more things like that. We're saying, can't we provide our children with a better foundation than we had? maybe if we could push our, if we could get up into the 25 or 50% bracket, maybe that would be good, but we're pushing towards 100. We have been given a great leaping start over people like my dad, people that are growing up in the church. It's like we are without excuse in a lot of ways. But you say, here today, you say, but my kids are raised, or I don't have kids, or I'm old. I didn't like raising kids the first time, and I sure don't intend to do it again. What value is a sermon on child rearing to me, an old duffer, or a tired old lady? Well, I think there is value, and I'm going to tell you. Now, hindsight should be 20/20. If you had children, you should be able to look back and see. You should have lots of things in your head that you can say, boy, I wish I'd have had a chance to do that different or do it over again. Maybe you just would have done it different. Maybe you don't want to do it over again. But if you can think through things you did right, things you did wrong, and you will have another chance, you know, as you're into the kingdom of God and you have people and cities underneath you, you'll have other opportunities to try it again. But maybe you don't have to wait that long. Maybe we can do something else. You know, firemen and rescue personnel, if they only did things once, wouldn't it be scary to call 911? Firemen and rescue personnel, they do it over and over again, trying to get it right when it really matters. Why can't we do that? Turn to Psalms 127 and verse 3. Psalm 127. Psalm 127, verse 3. Well, actually, let's go back to verse 1. I'll just read the whole chapter. Unless the Lord builds the house, Psalms 127, unless the Lord builds the house, they labor in vain who build it. Unless the Lord guards the city, the watchman stays awake in vain. It is vain for you to rise up early, to sit up late, to eat the bread of sorrows, for so he gives his beloved sleep. Verse 3, behold, children are a heritage from the Lord. They're a blessing. They're supposed to be a blessing from the Lord. The fruit of the womb is his reward. Like arrows in the hand of a warrior, so are the children of one's youth. Happy is the man who has his quiver full of them. They shall not be ashamed. They shall speak with their enemies in the gate. So, do you notice in verse 3 that it did not say, your children are a heritage from the Lord? Now, in verse 4, it starts talking about, so are the children of one's youth. So it's talking, there we're talking a little bit of parenting. But verse 3, it may be implied, but can't you insert the word, behold, you don't have to insert the word, behold, children. Your children, other children, children in general, should bring pleasure and are a gift from the Lord. If there were no children in this room would feel entirely different. Proverbs 17 and verse 6. Proverbs 17 verse 6. Children's children are the crown of old men, and the glory of children is their father. Again, maybe if you've never thought about it before, it doesn't say a man's grandchildren are the crown of the old man. It says children's children. It's saying grandchildren. If you're a grandparent, other grandchildren should be a glory. It should be the crown of old men and old women. So it doesn't mean that I'm saying that it doesn't matter whether your children or someone else's. Maybe your children aren't here. Maybe you didn't have children. I'm saying that children are supposed to be a heritage from God, that they're supposed to be a crown of older people. So why does everyone have to listen? Because I think we all have a lot to learn about raising this generation and the next generation. And that's all of us. As adults who have raised kids, and that direct phase is over, and there are many of you in that category in this room, you can now assist others in the process. you can assist it by discussing the subject with us young bucks that think we know what we're doing. You've been through it. Good examples, bad examples. By having interaction among the grown-ups and between parents and those that have done it before, I think that the veterans can teach us more than we know already. Let's look at an example of this. Titus 2 and verse 3. Titus 2 and verse 3. We're teaching the kids right now the books of the Bible, and it's Exodus and Leviticus. We're and Sean can read Habakkuk. So, okay, Titus 2 and verse 3. The older women likewise, that they be reverent in behavior, not slanderers, not given to much wine, teachers of good things, that they admonish the young women to love their husbands, to love their children. So here's an example of that you elderly, your mature adults, whatever you'd like to call yourselves, have an opportunity and an obligation to not just stand around in the corner. I'm not saying we do this. I'm saying we have an obligation to not just stand around in the corner, but to be somewhat involved in the lives of other people and assisting not only your own daughter or your own son-in-law or something like that, but we can assist each other. You have information that would do us good to hear. You can also assist here at church. We are a church. We are God's family. Do you know, in your own personal family, do you know your uncles, your aunts? Do you know the names of all your grandchildren and your do you know what cousin so-and-so does and uncle so-and-so does? Do you know their names? Do you know where they live? You probably do. You probably know their birth dates. In many cases, you might even know middle names. How about here at church? Are those names here important? This is your spiritual family. Do you know those names here as well as you would know your own personal family? And I say, why do you think we're sponsoring a pictorial contest? Because we don't know everyone as well as we need to, and it would do us good to all learn each other as well as we can. And yeah, you're going to have memory gaps, and you'll be a space cadet on this contest. I hope everybody gets involved in it. There's lots of money in it. I think we decided I wanted to kind of do a cash prize because I wanted everybody's eyes to kind of go, money, yeah, you know, like I forget the money. We need to learn the names and we need to know who's in our congregation and who's in our neighboring congregations. But a little bit of incentive goes a long ways. You can also have conversations with people outside of your age bracket. Now, if you notice in here in general, the big people talk to the big people and the little people talk to the big people. Well, what would be nice is if the big people came down the little people's level, or that the little people were brought up to the big people's level. The seniors to the little guys, now there's a teenage bracket in the middle here. They probably wouldn't like it if you lifted them up. But don't leave. Make sure in your routine here in church services that you're not just talking to your buddies. Get up the stream, down the stream, get around, get into, you know, maybe you're in the food line. You can say, hi, what's your name? Maybe you know the name because you won the pictorial contest. But you can get personal with these people, with each other, with the younger ones, and bring them into the fold. See, it's not their job. I won't expect one of the little ones over here to walk up to Mr. Wasik and say, hi, I'd like to know about you. It's not going to happen that way. It's our job to go to the young, not vice versa. Now, there are several people here in this congregation involved in teaching Sabbath school. From ages 5 to 19, people are here almost generally every week or every other week, And to you people, I'd like to say, attaboy and attagirl, kudos, or it's a good thing that you're doing, trying to make the Sabbath special for those people. But the rest of us can still be involved. I just happened to take Sean's homework today. You notice on the back is a picture. You can ask him what it is, but it's a pretty picture. But our story today was Numbers 13 and 14, Joshua, Caleb, and the spies spying out the promised land. So each week that they're in class, they have a certain agenda they're going over. They get to answer questions. What are spies? What are grasshoppers? What are giants? Grapes, milk and honey, Joshua and Caleb, promised land, 40 years. So these children are trying to learn information. Now, how can we be involved in that? How about asking the child of, I mean, these are the little guys. How about asking the tall ones over there that you have to look up to? What did you do in Sabbath school today? Make them talk. Make the little ones talk. Make the big ones talk. It's good for them, and it'll help you build the relationship. Mrs. Mickelson is she's working to get the young ladies more involved with the older women, trying to get meetings set up so that you can tea parties and this type of thing, and she's working on that. And I would say, ladies in the congregation, what do you have to offer Mrs. Mickelson in trying to get the younger people together with the old people? You need to think about that and see what you have to offer. Men, what do you have to offer to help boys be men, to be real men? Men of steel and velvet. Men who have no doubt what their gender is. Because that's a problem in today's society. Confusion about whether you're a boy or a girl. And that's ridiculous to have that kind of a problem in a church. We're not as knit as we could be. No matter how knit we are, we can improve. If my parents can improve on what they did, we can improve on what we do, and we're never going to sit down and think that we've got it made, right? I'm not saying that we're a mess. I'm not saying that we're doing everything wrong. I'm saying that we can do better. Because if you look at the history of the young people staying in the church, we're not doing something right. So we need to try something different because our attrition rate hasn't been very positive. So we need to build on the foundation that we've all been given and keep on building and making a difference for the next generation. We need to make the children look forward to coming to church each week. If they come and they think, oh, all I'm going to do today is sit and listen to whatever speaker, today I'm doing something different. I brought my dog with me. So there, everybody can look at my dog. This dog will sit up here. That's different, isn't it? There. Kids have something to look at now. When they think of this sermon, they'll think of my dog sitting up here on the lectern. You can say hi today to a young person, and there's a good chance if you say it to the right age, that young person will turn and the other direction. Because they're not used to that. They've been told at home, don't talk to strangers. Okay, so here we are, a church family, coming each week to essentially a family reunion, and the children should not get used to this turning, and maybe they're not used to us saying hi. So we're going to have to do something different. We can, like I said, we can talk to them in the food line. We can offer to help. We can, a year or so ago, there was a man from the west side of the state, and I don't remember his name. Some of you know him. He was over here on working in Liberty Lake on a project, and he attended with us a couple times. And my shy son, Sean, and this guy somehow seemed to hit it off. Well, the next time he came, which wasn't the next week, it might have been a month later or something, this gentleman brought Sean a gift. I have no idea what the gift was. Knowing Sean, it was probably a piece of construction equipment. But the way that it was done, there were two things that stood out. One, that a guy that didn't know us from, partly from Adam, just kind of met us, would bring, go out of his way to bring my son a gift. I thought that was pretty good. I remembered it. The other thing that was unique about the situation was how this man gave his gift. Now, I don't intend to tell everybody how he did it because I might want to do it or somebody else might want to do it. But the way he presented this gift was worth a laugh. And it was certainly entertaining to watch him unwrap that gift. So if you want to know, you can come ask me later. So his technique, the fact that he did it, to me, was impressive. Now, we know kids like gifts, and my girls and Kelly Gangnath have been hitting it off. You'll have to ask him why, because I haven't been there. I didn't tell them to go talk to the big guy, but they've nicknamed him the big guy. So about 3 weeks ago or so, he was over on the other side preparing tapes to be putting them in mailers or something, and you have to get the story from him, but somehow the girls came up to him and they wanted something mailed to them. They wanted a present, or they wanted something too. You know, send me something. Well, I don't know quite what Kelly did, but I know that about 3 days later in the mail, we got presents. Now, the girls got horse stickers, and I think Sean got a Hot Wheels car. Yeah. Yep, that's what he got. So I assure you, if Kelly wasn't their buddy before, that he's their buddy now. 2 or 3 weeks ago, we were invited over to the Oliver's house. Quite frankly, if we'd have known they lived so far away, we'd have gotten a motel, but... That's not really true. We went to the Oliver's, and in the course of the evening, Saturday evening, he took us out into the garage. Now, if you haven't been to the Oliver's house, the garage is much bigger than the house is. So here are my kids out in the garage, and they're walking, and we have cars in the rafters, we have cars that you can see through the floorboards. There's just all kinds of cars there. It's a virtual museum. And the girls say to him, "What are you doing with all this junk?" Mr. Oliver didn't remember that, but I did. But that visit will be in their memory for a long time. And it doesn't take much to impress a child. They don't like being yelled at. They get enough of that at home. But visits like that go a long ways towards building unity in the church. So you say you don't like kids running through your legs at church. You get tired of these little brats running around here. Why don't they slow down, right? Well, why don't you just take one of them when they go whizzing by? Mom did this the other day. One named Sean went whizzing by. She nabbed him just as slick as anything and just plopped him down and stopped his little race wherever he was going to. Now, great. That's what we need. If you see a child running, you'd be a committee of one to say, "Hey, where are you going? Go fire?" I remember the time that I was running in through the living room and I fell down and broke my face across the coffee table, and I learned not to do that. So, I mean, we can each be a committee of one. We don't have to just stand around and tell other people, like, "Why don't you raise your kids better?" Because we're off talking to someone our own size. So we need to get involved. Don't just, like I said, get down to their level, bring them up to your level. Now, kids follow parents' examples. How do you suppose we're ever going to get the setup crews to grow? Right now, we have a bunch of near-retired citizens on our setup crews, and the young people that have all the energy come in after the fact, and they'll help us tear down a little bit. What we need is the family involvement. We need those kids coming and helping to set up ahead of time and working with the family to make the church function better. But when the parents don't do it, you think the kids are going to do it? There's no way. The kids are going to do what the parents do. They're following our footsteps. They're doing whatever generally is easiest. That's the way they tend to be wired. I was like that, and if you're not pushed, you're not probably going to do it. So we need pushed a little bit. You can discuss the Sabbath school topics with them. What did you learn today? I think I already went over that. Can you be known as a gift giver or a storyteller? I heard some church area, there's an older lady, and if you want to know where this lady is, she's sitting in the back corner somewhere, and she has a couple kids on her lap, and apparently, I don't know if she reads to them or something like that, but these kids look forward to coming to church and hearing what this lady has to say. Or like the girls calling big guy Kelly over here, they must look forward to coming and bugging him. Now, you can figure out little things to do. Now, I noticed last week we had company. Tim Heine was his name. He had some little trick that he'd pull his thumb off for the kids, right? Now, big deal. I mean, isn't that dumb? Yes, it's dumb to a grown-up, but to a kid, that's pretty neat. He pulls his thumb off. Look at that. How does he do that? A dumb little thing like that can help break the ice. You might say hi to them, and they might turn and run, but you might say, hi, do you want to see my thumb come off? And I'll bet you they'll stay and watch. Now, I mentioned going over to Oliver's. I can remember well when I was a child, not very many times did we visit my grandfather's place, but he had this big John Deere tractor, a lot like Maine's tractor, went pud, 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 pud. And I would go to his house, and I just wanted to go out and drive that tractor or ride that tractor. I wanted to, you know, this was not it was an exciting adventure to go to someone else's house, and they had stuff that we didn't have, and I wanted to go be involved in that stuff. I don't want to go in the house and talk about, well, what did you do last week? I want to go out and see the tractor. And I think when we're inviting people over, just like going to Oliver's, we'll go out and look at these cars in the rafters, and it makes an impression on the kids. And you can use those types of things to break the ice and to build the bond between the young and the old. Make their day. Invite them over. If you can figure out, I mean, this might take a little creative energy here. Invite them over and have something special planned. Last week when we had the company, we were going to go up to Grandma's and go sled riding. Well, these kids were from Colorado, so I don't think sled riding was that big a deal, but they'd never done it at Grandma's house. So I thought, well, you know, we had 2 inches of snow the other day. I think I'd take the snow plow up there. So I load their kids into the Jeep, and we go up to Grandma's, and we plowed snow. I don't know if that made an impression on them or not, but I hope it did. I hope that they can remember that they did something different when they visited the Imeses. At the Feast of Tabernacles in 1999 in Bend, Vernon Hargrove gave a sermon. The title was, Gather the People, Break the Bread, Share the Story. Only as old as he is when he said it, he went, Gather the people, break the bread, and share the story. I remember in Big Sandy, there was I forget what his name was, but he was old, and he would give a sermonette, and he would stand up here, and he would just shake. And I wonder if he's going to die today. he was so old. But Mr. Hargrove, in his sermon, Gather the People, Break the Bread, and Share the Story, he said, it's one thing to build a family, it's another thing to bond a family. And all these kids around us, and all of us are getting older. We're all building families, we're all developing these family trees, but are we bonding that family? He gave a quote that said, when an old man dies, a library burns down. And as we lose old people, you elderly people, as you tick off one at a time, unfortunately, it's in a lot of ways that it's like a library that goes down every time that happens. And if you haven't peruse that library and had a feel for what it is, then you've been missing something. He said, it is a mistake to build a family and not bond a family. So as we're going through our daily routines here, we need to be not just concerned about getting to know names, because that doesn't bond. If you don't spend time together, you're not going to bond. One reason for getting together apart from the Sabbath, not on the Sabbath, is that you can tell stories that aren't necessarily Bible-related. I well remember my dad getting together with other grown-ups and, usually with hunting stories, right? Or trucking stories or something. But these stories are good. Sean typically doesn't go to bed without saying, hey, tell me a story about when you and Uncle Jerry were little. And I'm out of stories. What can I tell them tonight? But they are curious and they want to know. And if we're willing to tell them, they're willing to listen. Now, some of you know that Al Weirich is a storyteller. Now, maybe nobody, only I know that. But if you want some good stories, talk to Al Weirich. He has one for you. His stories go way back. And to a time that most kids in here can't relate to because it's not on their video games. Mylena can tell fish stories too. So if you haven't gotten to know these old people and they go down, you're going to lose another library. You're not going to have an opportunity to have a feel for what was in their library. Children have no idea what's outside their box. Their little world is all encapsulated, and they think the front yard is as big as the world gets. And seems to me that we know better than that, and it's up to us to help them expand their box and help their box grow. What do you think it will take to turn a child on? Would you expect Derek to like rocks? Hi, Derek. Would you expect Roy Long to feed his passion? There's a family down in Kennewick that does too. I could care less about rocks. But here's a young man who's found a senior citizen, right here, and they're working together and they're doing something exciting. Now, I think that's great. But parents, to make this work real well, the parents are going to have to work on the kids at home. You're not just going to come to church and like I said, the kids are used to not talking to strangers. So it's going to take some prep work on the parents' part to say, hey, it's okay. It's okay to talk to Kelly Gangnap, or it's okay to talk to whoever it is. This church is supposed to be, and it better be, a safe house. We shouldn't have to worry about strangers or weirdos or anything ever going wrong when they're inside these four walls. Our children should feel safe to talk to us, and they should trust us. And part of the reason of learning names is to help bond, help tear down the barriers between us, and help us to get to know one another so that if you do nab one of them that is on a racetrack, that he'll have a clue that it's Aunt so-and-so or his church aunt so-and-so, that he won't feel threatened or be so quite so likely to tear away from you. Parents have to be mindful that church is not an adult function, is it? Isn't church, didn't we all bring our children here? We all came here together. It's not just an adult function. It's a family function. So it's, like I said before, the burden is on us to bend over and bend down and talk to them and get to know them. Who squatted down in the Bible and took the child in his arms? Well, Jesus did, of course, because he cared for the young people. And if you will look through the Bible, you will see that he did. He said that whoever receives one of these little children in my name receives me, and whoever receives me receives him that sent me. So, I think that you have a gift, whether it's telling stories or telling fish tales or whatever it might be. I think you have something to offer the young people. I think they don't know it, but I think that you could figure out something, some way of bringing them into the fold, and you can develop your gift in doing that. Now, to the young people, I think that if you're old enough to understand, that you can figure out some of these grown-ups to talk to. Now, let's just take for instance, let's step out and be brave. Let's walk up to Steve Oliver. Got to pick on. Let's walk up to Steve Oliver and ask him what it's like to ride a motorcycle at 130 miles an hour. Now, wouldn't that be exciting to most young boys? I would think so. I'd want to know what it's like to have your lips going dark like that. And, you know, we have people that are into music. We have people into art, carpentry, electricians, cabinet makers, people of all types here. And there's a host of resources to call on. There's an article in the current Reader's Digest about mining emeralds. And the guy is confident that there's emerald under all this dirt. He believes it. He believes that if he goes and mines, that he's going to get a payback. But you have to mine it. You get rewarded on your first shovelful? Do you get rewarded the first time you say hi to a young person? Absolutely not. It'd be no difference in going out to a emerald mine and taking the first shovel full of dirt. He said, at the end of the article, the author said, "Do you really think there is emerald in this ground?" And the guy says, "Oh, it's there all right." He was completely and totally confident. Yeah, he'd done his research. You've done your research too. You know that there's value in our young people. Our children are our prized possessions, and we need to treat them that way. Remember that our children are on loan from God. We're raising them for God, aren't we? Didn't God give them to us as a gift, and we're gonna raise them and then hopefully turn them back over to God, and they'll follow in our footsteps? But they need to be taught. Proverbs 22:15. Proverbs 22:15, common child-rearing scripture. Foolishness is bound up in the heart of a child, but the rod of correction will drive it from him. So sure, children have a mind of their own because they think their box is the whole world. And they have to be taught as different. They have to be taught they can't race around in church, those types of things. Now, I can tell you that when I started this sermon, I've known I was going to speak on something for about a month and a half or so, and I was determined I was going to speak on child rearing and discipline. And so I've been reading and researching and getting all brushed up on how to tell you parents to raise your kids. Problem is, when you're preparing these messages, sometimes things don't go the way you want them to. And I keep getting, it was like I'm not supposed to go there. So we just missed an entire section of the sermon on child rearing. But that's okay, because I think as grown-ups, if we could get ourselves going in the right direction, we'd be more likely to have the children following along in the right footsteps. So we have to do our job, and then they will follow us. So maybe you'll get the other half of the sermon some other time. One scripture I like is Proverbs 29:17. It says, "Correct your son and he will give you rest." So if we, as parents, do the discipline that we need to, and we're taking care of things, our children will be much easier to raise and to deal with at church and to deal with in the family. But we have to do our part as parents. It's so much easier to be around the children at church or even at home, especially at home. It's so much easier to be around the children and to deal with them, and you'll get a lot more help when the children are decent and obedient and caring and thoughtful. But the children will put us to the test, won't they? And they'll aggravate us at church. They'll aggravate us at home. I wanted to think a little bit about how God disciplines. In a lot of ways, you might think that God's hands off, that He just sits back and watches, but you know, He's been involved with His children from the beginning, from Adam and Eve to Cain and the Israelites. He was right there when Job was going through his big trial. He was intimately involved with Saul and his stupidity, even with David, who was called a bloody man. God told him, I can't let you build the temple. Even though David was a man after his own heart, there were limits to what God as the father, as the parent, was going to allow his children to do. But does God insist on obedience? Absolutely. But God doesn't hide behind billboards like a county sheriff with a radar gun, and every time that you do something wrong, he comes out and writes you a ticket. We're going to have the day of judgment one of these days, but many of the consequences, many of the things that happen are almost like natural laws. When we don't do things right, it backfires on us. God doesn't have to necessarily do something. We bring the penalties on ourselves many times. Confusion comes in because God doesn't punish immediately like a parent does. If you turn to Ecclesiastes 8, verse 11, when we do something wrong, fire doesn't come out of heaven and zap us. God doesn't nag us and play silly games, but His rules are in place, and we just choose whether to obey or not. Like I said, on Judgment Day, we'll find out. Ecclesiastes 8, verse 11 says, because the sentence against an evil work is not executed speedily, therefore the heart of the sons of men is fully set in them to do evil. So if God did throw bolts of lightning out every time someone did something wrong, you'd find there would be a lot more obedience, but it would be the wrong kind of obedience. It would be obedience because they had to. So we are a family here, brethren. We are a family. We're God's family. We're God's children. We need to act like a family. I'd say if the kids knew more about you, you might have a lot of little friends. If the teens knew more about you, you might have a lot more friends. They can really brighten your day. It can be exciting to come to church and have the little ones crawl up on you or tell you what's gone on. But parenting is not easy. I wrote down, no one wants brats around. Imagine how God feels. How many people on this earth are brats? And God has to put up with all of us in various ways of being bratty. And again, as the perfect parent, He knows how to handle that, and He's got a plan in mind. But it takes continual effort to be loving, to do the right thing without being obnoxious and overbearing. Just like, you know, we don't want kids playing over in the other room unattended. So what's the solution for that? What do we do? Post guards over here with fly swatters or something, and every time a kid comes in there, we can slap them or something, and that's not what we need to do. The easy way to solve the problem of kids playing in the other room is for a few of the adults to meander into the other room and be over there and be part of their life. Now, that doesn't mean standing guard. That means if they go over and sit on the couch, just wander yourself right over there and sit on the couch with them and say, hi, how's it going? And you'll find one of two things happens. Either they'll get up and leave, which hopefully won't happen more than a couple of times, or you may find that together you might be able to work yourselves into a conversation together. But it takes kids need guidelines. In my barn, we have a barn that's divided kind of into three sections, and the center section is the kids section. That's where they put all their toys so that they don't have to have them out in the rain. Now, since the kids were little, I've been harping at them to put their toys in there in a way that they can still walk in. What they tend to do is to jam the last toy in and close the door. And it's a continual hassle, and every time I go in there, I'm whining at them to put these toys away and keep this barn neat. Well, one day I'd had enough of it, and we cleaned the entire barn. We emptied everything out, swept it out, and I went and got a can of red spray paint. And I painted lines on the ground, just like the basketball courts have, and I made an aisle through the center of the barn. And I said, if there are any toys inside of these lines, they're mine. One time in 2 months has been a toy inside the line. It hasn't been a problem because I put down the guidelines, and then I think they know I'm going to try to enforce it. And then it's not a problem anymore because I gave them strict guidelines. I haven't had to harp at them. I haven't had to say much of anything. But they'll remind me frequently, aren't we doing a good job of keeping the toys out of the neat? And you walk in there and you can walk blindfolded to the other end. And it's just another lesson to me that kids do like the guidelines, that they like being told what they can do. And they'll come to a time when they'll be able to think it through. But if you don't build those lessons and get those things started at an early age, it's not going to happen later. I was given a little saying here. It says, 100 years from now, it will not matter what kind of car I drove, what kind of house I lived in, how much money I had in my bank account, nor what my clothes looked like. But the world may be a little better because I was important in the life of a child. And I think that's what we need to be striving for, is to be a part and be involved and be important in the life of this younger generation and the next generation. We know that children are a blessing from God. We have to do what we can to bring them into the fold, to make it special. Maybe you can talk to the parents and see if you don't understand or don't know anything about a child. Maybe you've picked a child, you got your eye on a child. I'm going to try to adopt this child, or I'm going to try to make things special for this child today. Maybe you have to talk to your parents a little bit and see what kind of stickers they like or what would make them happy. Here's something. Try coming to church with a joke. Find a joke that is at the child's level, something that they can understand. Now, maybe today you'd have a young child joke. Maybe next week you'll have a teenager joke, something that they can appreciate. Why did the boy take the skunk to school? For show and smell. Now, my kids have told that silly little thing so many times, and then they say, pretend like you don't know the answer. I want to say they've done it dozens of times. But it's a cute little thing that will help you break the ice. Gather the people, break the bread, share the story. What a great place to do that at church. People are gathered, have a little food afterwards, tell a little story, you know. Take advantage of the situation. Children are a privilege. It doesn't always feel that way, but we know that's the truth, and if we do our job, one day it'll be a lot more believable. Recognize them for what they are, that they are God's gift to you to raise for Him. We're raising our children for God. It's a privilege to have so many of them in the congregation. We need to treasure them and develop them. My title today was The Ideal Parent. Now, the ideal parent is Jesus Christ. And we are trying to be like Him. We are His children. We're trying to be like Him and copy Him in everything He does. So it's my personal goal to be trying to build on the foundation that my parents gave me, trying to improve some kind of an equal percentage from how they started to where they ended up. And if I can do the same thing, given the help of the Bible and the people around me and the experts and that have something worth listening to along the way, if I can do all those things, then maybe my children will be a little closer to perfection, or my child rearing will be a little closer and give them a better chance when it's their turn. And wouldn't it be nice as we go through these individual struggles, and wouldn't it be nice to have the input from that perfect parent, from that ideal parent? And in a sense, we do. We don't. Jesus doesn't stand next to us and say, hey, why don't you try this? But as we pray to Him and as we read the Bible and take in His Word, He can open our minds to do the right things. And if we, as we submit to Him, He'll bless us. From God's perspective, He's not giving up on us. And we shouldn't give up on our children, and we shouldn't give up on other people's children. We need to continue to be trying and pursuing perfection, no matter what our age, no matter what our status in life is. So never give up on the process of learning and growing, of always trying to improve. Accept the mistakes that you've made. Repent. Move on. If you've messed up your child rearing, that's probably something that hurts down inside. Okay, fine. You have another chance. Let's try it again. Try on someone else's kids. But and seriously, we can keep having positive input. We can encourage the children. We can encourage the parents. We can make each and every Sabbath service something exciting and make the kids look forward to coming. God hasn't given up on us, whether we're a grandparent or a parent or a child. And we're all children to God. We may be all of these things. We may be grandparents, parents, and children. We're all children in one way or another, and we've all got a lot of growing to do, physically and spiritually. Let's turn to Ephesians 4:13. We can't quit. Even if things don't go well, you have to get up and keep on going. Ephesians 4:13. Till we all come to the unity of the faith and the knowledge of the Son of God, to a perfect man, to the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ. There's our goal. We're trying to be as good and as close to Jesus Christ as we can possibly be, to the stature of the fullness of Christ. What a wonderful place to be. Keep striving to be an ideal parent. Keep striving to be just like Jesus Christ.